This morning session is dedicated to summaries, those who have presented and those who are senior devotees and are have invested lots of thought over so many years in this important topic will be invited to speak something. What their contemplations have been before coming and or the message they delivered and points they'd like to emphasize and or the benefit received from the breakout sessions and or just general impressions on the topic, take-home messages, inspirational sound bites from themselves personally. Whatever they like, but it's very important we just keep within our time frame. So we need to end at 9:30. So each of us take 8-10 minutes.
70 minutes.
Huh?
It's 70 minutes until 9:30.
So eight to 10 minutes, and then we'll see if there's maybe some discussion at the end. 8 to 10 minutes, please. Try to do that. At the very beginning of this event, on Friday evening, some of you may not have been with us, I shared how this gathering, what was the catalyst that brought it about. And I had no expectation of exactly what would transpire other than what the title says, Exploring Varnashram. And the reasons have been given during the course of the presentation why it was important to explore the topic. I think our presenters did an excellent personal accomplishment of sharing the paradox of the topic, and Kontiya did a fantastic job of what was the first term? Paroxysm. Paroxysm. Why is Sri Radhika here? Why there's contention over this issue? Why? It's just, you know, a clear instruction of our founder Acharya. Why is there contention? I think did a very nice job. I have greater clarity on a topic that I've never had much clarity on. And because there was lack of clarity on it, I never really invested so much attention on a topic that for me didn't have very much clarity. So hearing from these devotees helped me a lot get more clarity. My nature is it takes me a while to process things, kind of slow, and I'm sure over a course of time, messages that were shared will resonate and it will lead to further discussion. Already, before coming here, Badri Narayan Swami was wishing that this topic goes before the GBC, that there should be another gathering of this nature to take, not just to say the same messages again, but vet a little bit some specific issues and have persons prepared to speak on certain issues, just to go more deeply. Let's see what happens. But certainly, feedback that I received from a number of the devotees was, wow, I never really knew so much about Varnashram, and now at least I know something about it, and why it's important. So, mission accomplished, as far as I'm concerned. Just take the topic and stir the topic important. Abhiram's not with us, but he made such a nice presentation on the 50%, then this his last slide, the 100%. So we have a lot of work to do. As I'm speaking, I'm thinking of the number of points that we're going to require work, deeper study of our founder Acharya's wishes. Even just yesterday afternoon, I was listening to the entire recording twice of that morning walk conversation that made its way into Konteya's presentation, and there's so many points in that morning walk conversation. Just hearing it, I wanted to hear it again, and I'm sure I want to hear it again. So, mission accomplished. Just churning the topic and helping us go more deeply to understand the message. And yeah, a little feedback I gave to Shivram Maharaj. He wanted to know how did it go. I said, "This is for your sake, sharing this. Content fantastic. The visuals were less than fantastic. It was hard to read the text." And the British devotee, at least for me, spoke fast and I couldn't understand what he said. I don't know how about the rest of you. And the audio was choppy in some places. He apologized and said it was the day after Janmashtami, Vyasa Puja day for an exhausted Tirupati, crew. We did the best we could. Next time he'll do it better. So we can look forward to more, more thoughtful as well as more visually clear. I'm feeling very inspired and enthused on looking forward to helping to fulfill our founder Acharya's wishes in this regard, in so many fronts to do more and improve.
Okay. Hare Krishna. Well, out of my naturally, I said on Saturday that I don't know that much about Varnashram. The reality is, I have thought about it a lot, and specifically during this this weekend, it brought back memories of almost 18 years ago now.
I'm motioning to
I thought you were telling me to hold the microphone. No, okay. Because we were in Vrindavan. I lived in Vrindavan for many years and was involved in the school there, the Gurukula. And we were faced with a situation where we kind of took over at a school at a time when the movement had just become kind of aware of all the problems of the past in the school. And we were down to 28 students in a building that could hold almost 300, and no money and no support and no ISKCON devotees interested in sending their children to Gurukul. And so I can remember at that time, and we studied everything Srila Prabhupada said about Gurukul. I was really inspired by Kanteya Prabhu's presentation, and then trying to figure out how to take that and apply it to our situation that we were in. One option was just close the school. That would have been probably the easiest one, because only 28 kids and et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, we decided not to, and we tried to come up with a plan that would simultaneously honor the principles. Jayadwaita Maharaj was asking about principles during my talk that Srila Prabhupada was talking about in terms of Varnashram College and in terms of Gurukula, and at the same time, as he said once, ISKCON or FISKCON, just get kids. That's what he once said that. The devotee asked him, so, well, should we bring ISKCON children to the Vrindavan Gurukula? Probably just said ISKCON or FISKCON. So we went for FISKCON and gradually filled up the school. Over 300 children there, I think, right now. But what really struck in my mind is listening to Kaunteya Prabhu, Abhiram Prabhu, Tukaram Prabhu and Parijata Mataji as well, all of them, I really appreciated it because they talked practically. They presented Srila Prabhupada's statements, and at the same time, they didn't just leave it at that. They also talked about how to practically do that. Of course, Parijata Mataji was the most practical. She says, like, our varnashram is we get up and we work hard. I like that. but I could really appreciate that because that's what we tried to do in Vrindavan. I can't, obviously some people would say we weren't successful. Some people might say we were, but we tried to do that. And that's, I think, a challenge in our whole discussion about varnashram is to discuss. One professor once said, I think I got this once from Jayadwaita Swami, a teacher that he had, but I'm not sure. So if I'm misquoting you, just let me know. That it's okay to have your head in the clouds as long as your feet are on the ground. No? Anyway, I heard it from someplace. Anyway, I like this. I like the statement. I like the statement. It's okay to have your head in the clouds as long as your feet are on the ground. And Srila Prabhupada was very much like that. He spoke Siddhanta and spoke philosophy, and also he was certainly a very practical person. So that was one point. The other point I wanted to say was, so as a good ISKCON devotee, I reported last night to my temple president and told her about what was going on here. And it very much echoes what Ramapad Swami was saying, that the title of my talk was not a joke. It was like, oh my God, Maharaj, we're going to talk about varnashram. And I really believe that Maharaj was successful in bringing this together, because I think it was it's a really solid step forward in direction with mature devotees talking from deep realization about the topic. And I think I learned a lot, and I think he was very successful in exploring and that first step to understand it. So thank you, Hare Krishna.
Go to it, Kante, then Abhiram, then we'll go back this way.
Varnashram is everywhere. Sometimes the devotees wonder, what is this varnashram? Where is it? And actually, we are already practicing it. I'm sure everyone in this room can look around and recognize the brahmacharis, the grihasthas, the sannyasis. Vanaprasthas are a little more difficult because traditionally, they wear three barks, so they're expert at camouflage. You don't see them, but they are there. So they're already there. See, when you join the Hare Krishna movement, you also join the Varnashram Dharma. It's in the small print of the contract. Just like vitamins, the concept and the name vitamin, it's a new word. It was coined in 1911. So it's about 105 years that people talk about vitamins. But obviously vitamins exist in the fruit since time immemorial. But just people wasn't thinking about vitamins till 1911. I give a practical example. How many of you know what state we are in? The United States of America? What state we're in? Oh. Okay. How many of you know what county are we in? See, it's already much less. So, we are in a county. It's called Juniata. The proper pronunciation is Juniata County. And either you know you are in Juniata County or not, you are in Juniata County. So either you know you're part of Varnashram Dharma or not, you are part of Varnashram Dharma. Only the most serious cases are outside Varnashram Dharma. That means they don't fit in the Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra like that. So, I take a page from Tukaram Prabhu's presentation. He explains something very important. When we discuss a complex issue, we need to be very careful in the mimamsa or exegesis interpretation. And he explained how there is a discipline in doing that. You have to consider the context, you have to consider the chronology, you have to consider the definition, you have to consider the interlocutor to whom the particular statement was made, the motivation, and so on and so forth. So that it's a very important lesson I hope we learned, not only for discussing Varnashram, but for discussing anything. Because the nature of Krishna consciousness, Krishna conscious theology, is that certain things are absolute, and you'll hear a universal statements from anywhere. Like Balaram is the first expansion of Krishna. You'll never hear that Krishna is the first expansion of Balaram. But other things, you'll hear different things. On Varnashram, on the origin of the jiva, and so on and so forth. Okay, to go on and on and on. So I think we can treasure those teachings of being very careful. There is a discipline of interpretation, and we should really know. We shouldn't stop at the first meaning that attracts us. Then, can you put this in the wall? So we discussed how paroxysms, we shouldn't be too emotional, although it's normal to be emotional when we deal with social issue, political issue, in the sense of how society should be organized, what's the role of the different members, what's the role of the different genders, and so on and so forth. Second, we should understand that we do have filters, and sometimes even something which is in nature sattvic can be presented in a tamasic way. Or something can be morphed, warped in different gunas. Just like if you tell your child, wash your hands before eating. That's a sattvic message. But it may also be presented in tamaguna. If we shout so hard and in such a violent way, wash your hands! That maybe he will wash the hands, but his hands will tremble for the rest of his life too. Okay. And then this very important concept of taking Srila Prabhupada as a whole. Understanding that Srila Prabhupada said many, many things, and it's a lifelong process to understand what he actually meant, or how he defined in different way. And finally, we discussed about education, how education is the root of society, any form of society, any form of civilization. Because education prepares certain types of citizens. So Varnashram Dharma, an advanced civilization, especially Daiva Varnashram Dharma, centered on Krishna's and devotional service, has its own particular education. And as you can see, this is the, I'm sure many of you or all of you have recognized, this is the first purpose of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. To systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large and to educate all peoples in the techniques of spiritual life in order to check the imbalance of values in life and to achieve real unity and peace in the world. Something that stands out is how broad the Srila Prabhupada vision. Look at the words. Spiritual knowledge to society at large. So it's not just an internal cultivation. Educate all peoples This is an interesting word. See, people, you know, people is already a plural form of person. Peoples, the only correct English form, and Jadvait Maharaj can correct me if I'm wrong, the only correct form of using peoples with the final S is when you talk about different ethnic groups, different nations, different races. So Srila Prabhupada is not just saying all people in general, all the countries of the world. And then, what's the goal? Achieve real unity and peace in the world. So this is a planetary vision. And so, if we are not able to systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to our children, then how can we ever hope to do it at this big level? So if we are not able to provide the type of education to our children, the type of education that Srila Prabhupada wanted, maybe we are in the wrong business. We should try something else. And the last comment is, we have heard about a lot these days about self-sufficiency, and Abhiram Prabhu stressed how if we ask everybody to define the word, we'll get so many different definitions what self-sufficiency means. So my understanding, or one angle of self-sufficiency, is that more important than economic self-sufficiency, food self-sufficiency, more important than that is cultural self-sufficiency, psychological self-sufficiency, the state of being, the state of faith in which we know that we have everything because God gives everything. God feeds the elephant in the forest. They don't work, but they get fed. So Krishna will take care of his devotees. We just have to be loyal, obedient, honest, serve the pure devotee, and know that we have everything within our community. Not in a fundamentalist, you use the word fundamentalist way, that we don't buy anything from outside, but in the sense that we are supposed to do this. We are supposed to teach the world. So we need to really, if we want to be successful in Varnashram Dharma, we want to really absorb our self-identity. Thank you very much.
He will be speaking. I'd like to comment on that. He will be speaking. You want to comment before you? I'd rather.
Just as you like.
Yeah, just in sequence. It's easier.
Okay. So, to sum up what I have tried to add to this wonderful discussion, Srila Prabhupada gave us shelter, offered us shelter, in fact offered the entire world shelter, and we're already well acquainted with the first part of his plan for giving shelter, and to various degrees we take that shelter with a tremendous benefit to ourselves, and even tremendous benefit to those who don't join in our movement but get the opportunity to hear the holy name or read something from Srila Prabhupada's books. Now the completion of his mission will be to actually fulfill the full purport of International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Because to have a society, that's a very big mandate. And it includes so many aspects of life, which we have been talking about in this discussion on Varnashram, to flesh out, to fill out the meaning of society. It is, as I mentioned, the earth is not flat, and Varnashram is not an egalitarian flat society. It's multi-tiered, the actual word referring to a village in India indicates family, which is a multi-tiered and complex social unit. There is a grandfather, and there are children, and in between there are mothers, fathers, aunties, uncles, and so many who have different positions. Those of you who are from India know that every member of the family is given a name which indicates where they are exactly in that hierarchy and in that cosmology of the family. Just like Kaka, who is Kaka? Which uncle? Which uncle? Father's brother. Right. And who is Mama? Mother's brother. So everything has a clear designation. I was once landing in India after being... I was living in India, of course, for some decades, but I was coming back after a visit to the States for a few months, and I happened to be on a plane with one of my godbrothers who didn't live in India, but he was visiting. He was an American. So we were naturally paired up together, and I invited him to come to my house and spend a night in my guest room. And so my driver, who hadn't seen me for 2 months now, and he had been with me for 8 years, when he saw me, he came up and he touched my feet. So that, and I put my hand on his shoulder. So the devotee, and we had, of course, a warm and friendly relationship, he thought it a good time to give me a jab, and he said, "Oh, you've become a big Maharaja now." Huh? So I took the opportunity to explain. I said, "You know, this is Indian culture. He's not, it's not me personally. It's the position I'm in. I'm a source of family. Right? And he's touching my feet, asking me to continue to give him shelter. If I did not put my hand acknowledging and accepting, he would be quite afraid. He'd be quite disturbed." Well, those of you who are from India understand this culture. He would think, "Well, he's taking my service, I'm depending on him, and he's not taking the responsibility that goes with it." So there are these relationships that appear to be higher and lower, but in actuality we're meant to all work together towards the common spiritual end. And it is not a flat earth. It is complex and it's hierarchical. And it's beautiful in that way because Krishna designed it that way. So we need to elaborate and fill out the society of Krishna consciousness and understand where we sit in that cosmology. If you want to have self-realization, if you actually want to have knowledge of yourself, you have to know where yourself is situated. And the most ideal position for the devotee is as low as we can get. One of my godbrothers who lives in Vrindavan, he likes to say, "Abhiram, we have to learn how to walk on our head, keeping our head always down, always humble." So this is the core feature of a Varnashram society. This great humility, and in that mood of humility, we can actually develop genuine love. As in the Shishastakam, Trinadapi Sunichina Turorapi Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. The translation of this particular phrase, offering respects to others, it's always accompanied with the preface, "Ready all respects to others." Offering all respects to others alone could be an automatic action. It's very, could just be a habit that our social norms require. But being ready, that indicates an attitude, a mood, that I'm eager to do it. I'm ready to do it. Right? So these are the cultural underpinnings of Varnashram. They're most ideally cultivated in a common enterprise of living off the land and with mother cow. These are the simple facts that have been indicated by our tradition, by our shastras, by our acharyas, by Lord Krishna himself and how he lived and how he behaved. He was so appreciative of mother cow. Once Mother Yasoda had brought some shoes for him. She was worried that his tender feet are walking on the stones and maybe there's some thorns in the forest. So she was trying to convince him to wear shoes. And he said, "How can I wear shoes, Mother, when my millions of gurus," he referred to the cows as gurus, said, "they themselves don't wear shoes." So therefore he went barefoot. So imagine the love that he had for cow. And then the humility he shows to all of his elders. How about to Sudama Brahman? This is the culture. So this is our next phase of growth, is to develop our culture, as Prabhu has just said, the cultural foundation. And the cultural foundation cultivates a unity that's bound together in love. And love is underpinned by deep respect, and deep respect is underpinned by humility, by understanding that I'm very small, and I'm very dependent. And if I don't have the blessings and kindness of others, I'll simply fail. I'll fall in the very next step. So cultivating this attitude, we can build a society that cultivates Krishna consciousness naturally within us, that transfers it to our children. There are so many elaborations which you've discussed today, such as Gurukula, economic systems, etc., etc. These will solidify this direction. But it all ultimately ties back in the very primary instruction, Trinada Pisanichi na Tarara Pisahishna, Amanina, Mahanadina, Kirtanya, Sadahari. Because our goal is to have the Lord dance on our tongue. And that means we have to progress from Namabhas to actually chanting the name of Krishna, to actually calling on the Lord. And that requires purity. Collectively and individually, we require each other. I can't go anywhere without my God brothers and sisters. I once mentioned to one of my godbrothers who's playing the role of guru very kindly to so many devotees that, you know, Maharaj, he used to work with serving Srila Prabhupada. In fact, it was Bhakti Chu Swami, just to make it simple. I said, you know, if we go back to see Srila Prabhupada and we don't have all of our godbrothers and sisters with us, what do you think he's going to say? And Maharaj looked, he said, yeah, he's going to say, go back and get them. So it is a collective effort. We must go and hold each other. And Varnashram is the methodology, the structure, how we do it. So this is a very, very much an integral part. It isn't a separate part. And this is something I hoped that this conference would convey, and I think it did. I think in so many wonderful ways the speakers illuminated that point. And I did notice, even in the crowd, that there was still that conception, well, do we really need this? Isn't this superfluous? This is the completion of Srila Prabhupada's mission. And yes, do we need each other? Is that superfluous? And if we're going to work together as a society, do we not need to have a system to do that in? And if we're going to have different ages and different levels of duties, different types of modes of working, do we not need a way to organize that? Do we not need a way to integrate the children and to naturalize them into this process? Of course we do. That's Varnashram. And it was created by the Lord. Chatur Dharma Mayum Shastam. I created this. Why did he create it? Out of his mercy, out of his kindness. So I hope that we get to see all of you again, and I hope that we all proceed forward and build out the society as Srila Prabhupada hoped we would. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
The conference... The conference had many significant elements, and two stand out. One, that Gita Nagari is the venue for such a conversation, and I'm very, very grateful to His Holiness Ramaprasad Swami for initiating this and for bringing all of the key speakers together, and as well as all of you together to have such. I also appreciate how systematic the presentations were regarding how those of us younger and trying to understand Prabhupada's teachings on Varnashram, or at least some of his instructions, how to almost... you gave very systematic frameworks to guide our thought processes on at least on how to proceed to understand Varnashram and eventually function in such a system. I look forward to more conversations and eventually some implementation plans on whatever levels, especially being on a farm community where invariably we're acting according to certain varnas, occupational duties. The cows are tended to, the land is plowed, the deities are served and worshipped, the administrative matters, there's a lot of physical work. So invariably we are acting in those roles. And if there is some further framework, some further system that we could adopt to make that more effective in our service, then I look forward to participating in that. A summary of some of the points we had presented. We, as we mentioned, had a working definition of Varnashram. The service being, by virtue of being on a farm, is almost creating certain occupational duties for all of us. And we simply do the needful. And in doing the needful, then this, the elements of this life that Prabhupada talks about centered around land and cows, those aspects are met. And in doing so, the best part of it is that all of us serving in those ways are so fulfilled. And I'm always in amazement by that, because you know, one always wonders what is one's nature, how should we serve, what should take very strict, well, very close instructions from our spiritual masters. And our nature is to serve, you know, that is our real nature anyway, so however we are engaged. But I always think, well, you know, coming from a city program, I only knew Harinam and books and university programs and, you know, reaching out to different communities, trying to, you know, spread the outreach. And then tending to cows, growing something, and the mindset of, you know, maybe you become a farmer if you can't make it in life, something like that. There's so many different aspects are floating around. Even within our society, the impressions we bring, however Prabhupada is always, in his instructions on farming and farms, how it is such a noble profession, and I have appreciation for that. So one thing that comes to my consciousness is, at some point, would we consider redefining success among ourselves as devotees? I don't know what the definition of success is in the broader scope, but sometimes from my own training and experience in ISKCON, it's, you know, whether we reach the most number of people, whether we distributed the most number of books. And I'm wondering if we were to include more people, people, devotees, non-devotees, in supporting roles, in core roles, whatever services they perform, that they can be engaged in such a way that success has a wider definition and becomes more inclusive of even, you know, rural communities and And so it becomes attractive for someone who encounters all of you as frontline preachers in the cities, that there is a lot happening, there can be a lot of fulfillment in rural projects. And therefore, in our presentation, we understood the current paradigm to be there's a lot of action in the cities, and we proposed a paradigm to say, well, this action on how you can invite others to participate in that. For those of you living in the cities and developing and giving out Krishna consciousness. And our responsibility then becomes to serve you in that way. Another aspect for us, and I just want to end with that, is partnerships are very essential. Collaboration is extremely essential between rural communities and city projects. And some of our speakers touched on that too. Every city center ought to be connected to some farm community. And it means that those of us living on farms are not lazies and crazies, that we actually have to work hard. Because to meet the needs of city dwellers is a big responsibility. What are some partnerships that we'd like to have? Partnerships with leaders so that we can meet the needs of their communities through our food system, which is constantly being challenged. I don't know, the number of wholesome foods you can get in the market is diminishing. There are always, you know, food recalls and different things like that. So everything is so adulterated. So what do we offer? What is the purity of our offering to our deities unless we really make the efforts to start to at least grow some of it ourselves or make some endeavor in that regard? We want to support the families that live in the cities by meeting their needs, which means a lot of production on farms, a lot of activity, a lot of action. We want to support the frontline preachers in the cities, which means that, and I expressed that in our presentation yesterday, that somehow we have to step up as farm residents, improve facilities, so you have the faith and trust in us to bring the people that you're cultivating to an environment like this where they want experience exceptional hospitality, experience good facilities, clean facilities, experience sweetness and bhakti, and most of all, leave transformed on some level because they've connected with some aspect of this lifestyle. More importantly for us is that it is a working model because that builds faith in people, in our philosophy and process, that there's actually application of all that we're learning. We're not this body, it's a basic, how do we understand Krishna? How are our relationships regulated? You know, what are the family systems? You know, how steady are grihastas? How strong are our brahmacharis, sannyasis? How effective are our different varnas in the occupational roles? And so this working model, you know, for us, the infrastructure is here, the land is here, the cows are here, and it will take a lot of shifting on all of our parts to want to participate in a farm setting. Varnashram, as Kunti Prabhu was expressing, is everywhere. Somehow farms have become synonymous with Varnashram just because the land and cows, you know, it's just kind of like there's some immediate connection there. And so my concluding statement would be that ultimately as ISKCON, we serve as vehicles for transformation. You know, someone's coming in, transformation of their hearts to bring them closer to Krishna, to increase each other's faith. And our temples, our farms serve as vehicles for that. And whatever we can offer them, whatever we can do to make it easy for them to come to Krishna, that's what we endeavor to do. So some, you know, animal advocate out there is wondering, well, what do the Hare Krishnas think about this? We ought to be at the front, at the forefront with our message regarding how animals are taken care of. And we have working models to show that. And the same applies for every facet of our existence. So I'm very grateful to everyone who has shared. I am grateful that I was given some opportunity to also share, and I look forward to all of your returns so that there can be further conversations that translate into action and implementation so that we can all try to do whatever we can to fulfill Srila Prabhupada's second half of his mission. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. So Maharaj asked me to speak as an observer because I didn't have any presentation. So my observation is that I want to thank everyone for your association very much, especially your participation in the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. I very much appreciate Kanteya's point that we are already engaging in Varnashram. We can't really avoid it. And he also mentioned at one of either the aftermath or his original lecture or his talk, presentation, that Prabhupada always spoke about Varnashram. You know, he might have said that, you know, we can't do it in Kali Yuga, but he did it by describing Vedic culture throughout it from the beginning to the end. Always becoming. What does culture mean? Culture means the behavior of a people according to their beliefs. Knows how you believe, that's how you behave. We see in the material society, they believe that the goal of life is to end with the most toys. Right? And that's how they behave. That's how they go about their life. So if we believe that we are eternal servants of Krishna, and that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we will behave in a certain way. Understand, we're not seeing Krishna all the time, so we need to reestablish our lost connection with Krishna. So in order to do that, we have to behave in a certain way. And Prabhupada talked about that constantly. If you look in the folio, I think Vedic culture, you have like 1,100 hits or something like that in the folio. Vedic culture. Always spoke about all the descriptions in what's Mahabharata, what's Ramayana about. All about Vedic culture. And one of the main points in Vedic culture is how we relate to each other. As Abhiram Prabhu has pointed out, this is essential. How are we going to relate to each other? How the Kshatriyas relate to the Shudras, how the Brahmins relate to, all that. And just how we relate to each other as Vaishnavas. These are the all-important points. And the only time that, at least from what I understand, is that when Prabhupada started calling Vedic culture Varnashram was in the conversation he had with his servant there. Forget his name. I'm getting old and sometimes I have these senior moments. And anyway, the conversation was going that well, Prabhupada, you said, he spoke about Varnashram, and Prabhupada, you said we just need to chant Hare Krishna. And Prabhupada's response was, well, they're not chanting Hare Krishna. So therefore, we need to introduce Varnashram. We need to, establish this culture. We need to get this culture to bring us up to a point of what? So that we can chant Hare Krishna. Because what's the Yuga Dharma? In this age, Yuga Dharma means duty, Yuga means this age of Kali Yuga, and that is Harinam, Harinam, Harinam eva kevalam, kalovanasteva nasteva nasteva gatiranyata. That's the only way for self-realization is chant the holy name, chant the holy name, chant the holy name. So again, thank you very much for participating. As Prabhupada would say, thank you for engaging in this Krishna consciousness movement. Hare Krishna.
His Holiness Rama Padmaraj asked me to say a few words. I wasn't able to take part in hearing as much as I would have liked to of the seminars. I gathered that the emphasis in this Varnashram conference was mainly on Varna, although I did hear that Kauntiya Prabhu had some excellent discussion of the Brahmacharya Ashram. He mentioned today that we see pretty much the ashrams, except that one of them is camouflaged. And I would suggest that the reason we don't see that ashram is not that it's camouflaged, but that it's practically non-existent. You don't see vanaprasthas in ISKCON for the same reason that you don't see giraffes in Gita Nagari. It's not that they're camouflaged, it's that they're not there. And the Varnashram system is, as a cloth, is woven of strands going vertically and horizontally. The Varnashram system is similarly a weave of four varnas and four ashramas. And when you have an ashram essentially missing, then you're going to have social distortion. The brahmacharis are not going to get the right example of where your life heads. Brahmachari to grihastha, and that's the end of life. The grihasthas themselves will be living in a, what Prabhupada called the grossest form of degradation. He said to stay in family life till the very end. In first canto, he said, it's the grossest form of degradation. And just to underscore it, he put it in italics. Someone was telling me yesterday that they did a folio search of vanaprastha and compulsory and found that compulsory came up with following four regulative principles, attending regularly, reading my books, chanting 16 rounds, and this also came up as compulsory. It's not, if you like, it's necessary. So this is a topic which is not that hard to figure out. Varnas may be more difficult because of so many reasons, but the vanaprastha ashram, what its duties are, what one does as a vanaprastha, is reasonably clear, but one has to do it. The determination has to be there, and the sense of responsibility from the grihastha ashram has to be there. This is another reason the grihastha ashram is distorted when we don't see all the ashrams, because the grihasthas have to support the vanaprasthas. Partly because the grihasthas are going to be the vanaprasthas. The brahmacharis some will be grihasthas, and the grihasthas will become vanaprasthas and sannyasis, and then you have a balanced system. If the grihasthas don't feel support the vanaprasthas, then their grihastha life becomes tinged by selfishness and sense gratification. And you get imbalance because you get abandoned people. People who are someone else's responsibility, you know, will form a committee, will have a conference, and time doesn't wait till, you know, the society and it gets it together. So this is a topic for further consideration and further gatherings, and even more, it's a topic for personal consideration. Because accepting the duties of the vanaprastha ashram is not something that you need to wait for the government to tell you to do. It's a personal commitment, it's a matter of personal realization, personal growth, and personal progress on the path back home, back to Godhead. Its purpose is not just, as with all the varnas, all the ashrams, to occupy a particular position. It's to advance one's life in achieving the goal of going back to Godhead. So this is a topic for perhaps further exploration as we go on. Thank you all. Hare Krishna.
We have a little over 15 minutes. Might be a good opportunity for some questions and answer session. And I have just one comment I'd like to make. Considering the topic, the voice of Dhruva and Parijata are a very special voice because they were, if you said it very nicely, they were doing the 50% and very boldly under Devamrita Maharaja's encouragement, they were attempting the other 50%, of course, in a particular field, meaning in a farm community. Not necessarily Varnashram is exclusive for farm communities, but it's where Prabhupada wanted to come here to do it, to teach. So their voice and their role in this dialogue is especially important because they've got their sleeves rolled up and they're attempting to do it. And it seems to me, this is a thought that I'm going to share out loud. Those persons who are, particularly the persons who are seated here and the presenters, including Tukaram, who's not here, and Shivaram Roach, who's not here, if we were to have, part two, it might be nice to select specific topics in advance and have persons give deep thought to specific topics on the Exploring Varnashram Part 2, just as Jayadwaita Maharaj presented one of those possible ones, the non-existent, or I shouldn't say, the hardly visible Vanaprastha Ashram. If we're going to speak about Varnashram, should we not speak about that? And what are some other items? So I'll put it out now just for all of you, but I'll be sending out a mail to the presenters and so forth. And hopefully there'll be more persons who are following Dhruva and Parijata's trailblazing effort and doing something along the lines of practical implementation along with, theorizing, armchair theorizing. And that might be a nice item, persons that went to how did it work or step two or whatever it is. So that's just some thought from my side. So any comments or questions from our audience? No, Mataji, I'm calling on her first. Thank you. Thank you. Here comes the microphone.
I was really happy to hear Advaita Swami bring up the issue of Vanaprastha. I feel like I'm one of those invisibles in that area.
Congratulations.
So it's been on my mind, and I've discussed it with other devotees about why they're not visible and if that definitely could be included in the discussion about and to explore it further about the issue of Vanaprastha and whether it's really happening. Because I was thinking of when Vidura went to see Dhritarashtra and forced him to come out of his, his comfort zone and to go into the forest, Or even I think Vanaprasthas are supposed to just go around and preach and teach. So I would really like to support that.
Jayadwaita Maharaj is smiling broadly. He has been speaking this for quite some time, particularly in Alachua. Yes, Maharaj?
Retiring from battle.
Yes, he has. It's dear to his heart. This Prabhu right here.
Well, I just wanted to thank all the presenters for going out of their way to come here and spend all this time talking about such a crucial and important...
And thank you for coming from California to join us.
Well, thank you. That's all that, not all that far these days. You just get on an airplane. But I do very much appreciate having this opportunity to hear from you all. Thank you.
How you going? Okay, Mataji over here. Anyone else would like to add something? Just show hands quickly. Okay.
Thank you. Maharaj, very indebted to you for being the first person here in the West with exploring this major topic. And you already mentioned yesterday about one of the topics, Gurukul and Varnashram. So we have the practical list coming up already, Vanaprastha, Gurukul, and we already have a cottage industry idea with Abhiram. So I'm going home here seeing that we actually, from this conference, have practical application already happening, and eternally indebted to Kunteya Prabhu about the Gurukul idea. So I think he's enlightened a lot of people. So this conference, we can say, has practical application, not just exploring, but it seems like we already have application in place. Thank you.
Just a clarification. The Gurukula was not Kaunteya's idea, it was God's idea.
Raise your hand. Hi, Krishna.
I've been regarding recently joining to Krishna consciousness, such as myself, how we're supposed to perceive the state of ISKCON and things that aren't being implemented, and such as Vanaprastha Ashram, other things. we need to show respect, but if we feel strongly about certain things, how are we supposed to go about this and perceive this?
How are you supposed to go about processing the absence of something that should be there but isn't there yet?
Yeah, when you're new to coming to Krishna consciousness.
Can you add more?
Sure.
Or you start?
No, you start. I'll put the cherry on the cake.
Hare Krishna. Well, I just said immediately when Prabhu... What's your name, Prabhu? Jordan. When Bhakti Jordan was speaking... what immediately came to mind is a wonderful letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote to Atreya Rishi Prabhu. And I probably in an earlier life I had it memorized, or at least part of it, but basically he was focusing on the word utopia.
I know the context. He'll tell the letter. The context was Atreya Rishi Prabhu, before he started visiting the Hare Krishna temple in New York, in Brooklyn, he was a highly successful accountant in Manhattan, a highly paid, highly successful accountant. Then he started reading Prabhupada's book, came to the temple. And then he was invited to take a look at the books, the financial records of the temple. And when he looked at the financial records of the temple, I won't mention the name of who was the president at the time, but he was shocked. And he wrote to Prabhupada, shocking. And Prabhupada replied,
don't expect utopia even in the Krishna consciousness movement. And then he goes into, I don't know if Atreya Rishi Prabhu's article had anything, letter to Srila Prabhupada had anything to do with impersonalism, but he focused on that and he said, or he mentioned it, and he said that to consider that there would be utopia, he said, that's impersonalism. Because wherever you see persons, there will be some fault. And then he gave some very exalted examples that the gopis sometimes put their tops on their bottoms, and they look like, he used the word, little children. And then he also gave the example of Krishna one time trying to milk a bull. He gave these examples of faults. He said, however, that despite whatever shortcomings they have, he said they're better than any person, even the greatest king, because despite their shortcomings, their focus is to somehow or other please Krishna and to serve Krishna. So it goes on in that vein, that to expect perfection in this world is kind of impersonalism. Wherever you see people, there's going to be some shortcomings. So there's also some shortcomings in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. But because, as you can see, the people in this room, despite whatever stuff we have going on in our life, we're trying to serve Krishna. So he said, every one of them, I think, was a word in the letter, better than kings. That's what came to my mind when Jordan spoke.
Like to add? Yeah. Prabhupada gave us lifetimes, just like Kauntiya's embellishing this word, peoples. He gave us lifetimes of instructions and mandates and accomplishments to perform. And my experience was whenever we did something, this is now quoting Anuttama or paraphrasing Anuttama Prabhu, Prabhupada was always forward-thinking. Whenever something wonderful was done, he would then give us the fresh challenge of something more wonderful to be done and more wonderful to be done. And even some of the fundamental things weren't in place and are not in place. And Prabhupada would give us fresh challenges. And I remember as a new devotee at the Alston Street, whatever it is, temple in Boston, there was a certain number of Back to Godhead magazines. Jai Dwaita Maharaj will remember this much better than me. But there was a certain report came to Prabhupada about how many Back to Godhead magazines were sold during a particular period of time, a month or whatever it was. And immediately Prabhupada said, very good, you increased the number to some, for thus at that time, gigantic number, and so many for Los Angeles and so many for New York and so many for Boston. And we were going, whoa. And then we did it. And then the number went up significantly more. And as an example of fresh challenge. So it's good to have fresh challenge, and it's good to see we're not lazy and complacent. There's more to do. So when you hear there's things not yet done, just as Jai Dwaita Maharaj did very expertly, those of you who are in this room who are grihasthas, please take it as a personal commitment and mission in life. Don't wait for some committee to figure out how to do it. And get support, but, participate in the solution rather than, why isn't something there? According to each of us, according to our position and capacity. As a new devotee. You want to add?
Huh? How do you go? I, in the mid-70s, I had a bhakta program. That was the day of the Dhanavir Maharaj, who was a brahmacharya at the time. He kind of started the bhakta program in L.A. But I had a bhakta program in Berkeley. And pretty successful. I mean, we had 30, 40 devotees. And to a man, because I was working with the men, everyone came to this point that your question came to me with this question to the man. And because we've got, Prabhupada has presented such high expectations, such a high philosophy, such a high culture, everything just so high, just so wonderful, so high. So when we come, we expect that everybody's just doing that. Automatically, we expect that. And then we start to see, well, wait a second, this guy doesn't put his tilak on right. This guy, wears his dhoti different way. You know, there's no vanaprasthas. Where's the varnashram? You know, we start to see like that because that's our tendency. And of course, most of us, at least beginning with myself, we thought, well, we'll be the guru very soon. You know, we'll be able to straighten these things out. But the key to this is having patience but enthusiasm. Right? At the same time, you can't just have one or the other. You can't just be enthusiastic or you just get lost in the mode of passion. And you can't just be patient because you get lost in the mode of ignorance, right? So you've combined these two and you're patient that when you see something that's not quite right, you're patient that that'll become right. And then you're enthusiastic to engage in the process so that you can do everything right. Because that's what we're here to do, is to concentrate on our... It's easy to see the faults in everybody else, in every society, and everywhere. But it's more way difficult to see them in ourselves. So, Hare Krishna.
One last question. Do we have... Just raise your hand. Bhakti Lee, yeah. Abhiram, you take this question.
Can you hear me? Okay. So a lot of nice words. I'm very glad to be here. Unfortunately, I also didn't get to hear everything, just going through my own personal ills and disturbances of the mind and fighting with that. But from what I have heard, it sparked some thoughts in my mind. The main thing... The main question that pops up is this whole deal about Varnashram. I've heard from the different speakers about education. I've heard about, living off the land. I've heard about using those resources to put into different projects to fund family building and all of those things. And I heard the importance of emphasizing the spiritual aspect, which is obviously the most important part, because Varnashram is supposed to be a bridge program, ultimately. My concern is more about the overall, the encompassing, the overall state of Varnashram. It's not just the farm. You also have the cities. You have this. You have that. You have the garners. You have forms of life, and so on. My concern is when I think of like the Ramayana or even Krishna's pastimes, Mathura, Vrindavan. I'm thinking of a place, for instance, where the people were exchanging foodstuffs and all of these things lovingly. They were exchanging knowledge. They were exchanging experience and all of these things. Everybody, the Kshatriyas, the Brahmana boys, everybody went to the same school. They were being taught. They were being taught by the same gurus. And then they were being trained by that same guru to go out and do whatever they had the propensity for. These different aspects don't seem to be present, and they seem to be things that I think make what we're going for possibly different from what was there then. I'm just kind of, I'm puzzled as to how we can make a transition from being a society of devotees and having these things to not just devotees, but a whole entire society. They already have their education system. They already have their so-called economic system. how can we get them to be convinced that they should live this other way, they should transition and make this change to a completely different way of life.
You just articulated like what part two of a Varnashram discussion might be made up of in different elements. So, you know, you've asked for a book. Not just, you know, a 3-minute answer. It's the question is very substantial and very broad, and I don't know if we're going to be able to give you a satisfying answer in, you know, before breakfast. So, especially looking that it's after the time we're supposed to break, how about you give thought to breaking that question down to some parts, and then perhaps some of those parts can be part of a, you know, part two, Varnashram, exploring Varnashram part two. The question that you presented is very clear, with many parts. Okay, is that satisfying?
Yeah, I'm satisfied for now.
Okay. So we're going to break, and can you recall the schedule again and remind everybody?
Yes, I can. Raghunandan, where are you? What's the schedule?
He is our MC. Go ahead.
Yes, now we have, actually we don't have Shadam right now. We have Bhajans by Satarupa Devi and
she's not here.
Group.
Huh?
We have a video presentation of Shivaram Maharaj remaining.
When is that going to be happening?
Yes, he knows the...
It's so the very next? You got a microphone. Go ahead and tell everybody what's next.
We have the remaining portion of Shivaram Maharaj's video presentation for the next 45 minutes.
Do we need a break?
We do not have a break, but... We
don't have a break. How are you doing? Is it okay? Break. Your break.
There's a brunch.
No breakfast. So it's at a quarter to the hour, 10-minute break, and then what are we going to do then?
We have a 45-minute video presentation.
And then what happens after that?
Then brunch.
Then breakfast. So if we do what we... 45 minutes. 45 minutes?
Yeah.
We would go until 10:30. We'll start at a quarter to 10, go to 10:30, and brunch, late breakfast, lunch at 10:30, and then coming back here for
question and answer.
What
session.
Time?
11:30.
The original was 11:30.
What time?
11:30 to 1.
11:30 to 1. Is that clear? Should we say it again? 10-minute break. If you're not back, we're going to start anyways. At a quarter to 10, Shivaram Maharaj part 3, till 10:30, and then. Brunch. Then 11:30, gather back again for questions and answers. Yes?
Yes, that's right.
Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.